accession number 20009, reel 2.
Les Perry, reel 2.
Just recently, being in the Royal British Legion, we were having a look round at Barking Cemetery, at the number of ex-servicemen graves that were in the cemetery. And I was looking for these German graves, these German airmen graves, and I asked the gatekeeper where they were. He said, well, actually, he said, they've been reinterred. All German airmen, apparently, that were shot down in this country were reinterred and buried in a German cemetery at Cannock Chase. So there, the story ended as far as the graves were concerned.
Any other memories of the Blitz in Barking or elsewhere that you personally witnessed?
No, I don't think so. There were so many sort of, so many things. Nothing really traumatic. It was sort of a continuous thing, night after night in the air raid shelters. When it first started, the people next door didn't have an air raid shelter. Now, there was three of them, and there was five of us, and we were all in this little Anderson shelter, and you'd have to sit on forms all night because they couldn't lay down. And then the people next door, after a while, they got an Anderson shelter of their own, so we could then, my father and I, boarded the sides and boarded the floor, and we put a mattress in there, and we slept down there. It wasn't very healthy. We got, now what did they call it? People broke out in sores, and I forget what they called it, but they were, it's just like scabies that you would get through sleeping in your clothes, sleeping in on damp mattresses and what have you, and it was very, very uncomfortable. And they said, what you have to do is to scrub the scabs off of them and then dab them with, what was it?
Iodine?
No, not iodine. It was something like that. I can't think what it was.
Potassium permanganate?
No, I can't think what it was. But I know it stung. And I did it once, and I got some of these spots around my private parts. And I was in the bath, and I did it. And I dabbed it with this stuff, and I had to turn the cold water tap on and kneel under the cold tap, and it was a bit painful. But that's the sort of thing that we got from it, you know. It was, I think, it became a way of life. We expected the German bombers, and when they came, you just went down the shelter, and after time, you didn't want to get out of bed. You said, you know, I just said to my mother, well, you go down the shelter and I'll come down if they start bombing. But it was accepted. I think it was just a way of life.
Did you ever think the Germans might win the war?
No, because I joined the Home Guard. I think I was about 16. And we used to patrol the streets with a bayonet stuck in the end of a metal tube. And we were going to fight the German paratroopers. And there's the attitude was that, you know, there's no way that we're going to give in and we're going to win. Although, I mean, we'd had so many setbacks, what with Dunkirk and setbacks in the desert and different things, you know. The news was very bad at that time. But I don't think anyone ever thought about giving in. It was, you know, we're in it and we're going to see it through.
Did you actually listen to Churchill's broadcast?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we used to, we used to wait for them to broadcast, because that was he was the backbone of England in those days.
And Lord Haw Haw?
Well, we just used to laugh. I mean, he was a laugh. But he must have upset quite a few people, because I can remember one particular one when he came on about Englanders, where is the Ark Royal? We, the Germans, have sunk it. And they had sunk it, hadn't they? They got into Scapa Flow and they sunk it.
Now, we've stopped at the point in your narrative of you're going to Whalley in May 1943, if you can tell me what happened to you.
Well, as I say, we reported Thursday afternoon. I can still remember it. We came out, got off the train, came out the station, and everyone's milling around, and there was some military police there. I said, straight up the hill. So, of course, we walked straight up the hill. Then there's some other chaps, right, turned in the barracks, and then went into the gymnasium, which was the reception centre, shows your papers and what have you, and then they say, right, go with this corporal and he'll take you to your billet. So we went into the billet, and it was strange. There was about, I think there was about 30 or 36 men in a room, to a room, and there were double bunks, double wooden bunks. And we were just told how to make our bed that day. And then the following day, we were issued with kit, which was a funny experience on its own, because you just go in and they take one look at you and say, right, medium, large, size, hats, 6 and 7/8, or whatever, you know. I still got it all in my paybook, all the sizes. And if it didn't fit, then you went back and changed it. But we were a motley crew in those days, because you had to put your battle dress on the next morning and go on parade, and the officer would come and inspect you. And we weren't allowed out of the camp for 6 weeks, because they said there's no way that we will let you mix with the general public looking such a scruffy lot as you are. You've got to at least resemble soldiers before we can let you on the streets. So for the first 6 weeks, we were confined to barracks. But after that 6 weeks, we'd got a little idea of what soldiering was all about, but only a little idea.
How were you treated during those 6 weeks?
Pretty fair. It was strange because, I mean, you know, we were young kids. Most of us were young. Well, I think all our platoon were all young volunteers. I don't think there was any of us over 18. It was all 17 and a half, and I was 17 and 8 months. The first weekend, we were all went for inoculations. And that, again, if doctors today could see the way that we was inoculated, they would faint. You'd have a row of men, and you'd have three doctors and in a row, and they'd all got hypodermic syringes, and you'd walk up and they'd jab it in your arm, give you a squirt, and then you'd hold your needle over a methylated spirits flame, and then you moved on to the next doctor and he did the same thing, and they did that to the whole intake. If you was at the back, you got a blunt needle and it hurt. And then the following weekend you were vaccinated, and that's affected me. The vaccination did affect me, because we got that on the Friday afternoon. I developed vaccine fever over the weekend. I went to the MO on Monday morning, and they, in those days, the medical officers looked on everybody as skiving, and he said, right, medicine and duties, and he sent me back, and I walked out, and I was going across the parade ground, and I passed out. And the sergeant major saw me, and he took me back in. He took me straight in to see medical officer. He said, has this man just been in to see you, sir? So I said, yes, he has. He said, what did you give him? He said, I gave him medicine and duties. He said, he's just passed out on the parade ground. He said, you better examine him, sir. Well, the sergeant majors are, you know. They were very polite to officers, but they made their presence felt. And I think I spent about 5 days in hospital with that. But after that, everything was okay. We then did 16 weeks of what they called core training, which was, in my case, was if you was going to be a driver, they sent you away to a service corps depot, or whatever you was going to do, they would send you there. But I was going to stay. I volunteered for the Essex Regiment, and I was going to be an infantryman. So I did 16 weeks infantry training. And then when we at Worley, yeah. And then when we finished that,
what was that like? The infantry training.
Well, it was it was tough. It was more or less learning the basics of infantry drill and weapon training. We had a lot of drills because on the parade ground, because that is they say that that's where you get your discipline from. The You know, if you're told to right turn, you right turn. You don't ask questions. Why do I have to go right? Why can't I go left? If you're told to go right, you go right. If the sergeant says jump, you ask him. You don't say no, I'm not. You say how high, sergeant? You know, that's the sort of thing that is instilled into you. We did a lot of weapon training. We had to strip a Bren gun down blindfold. We had to fire. We had to go on marches. We had firing our rifles and Brens on the range. We used to do marches. We used to do a false march in PT kit and boots. Always boots if you was marching. For two reasons. One was you got blisters if you had shoes. If you had slippers, plimsolls, or they'd call them trainers today, I suppose. It was PT care, and we used to do 5 mile in 50 minutes. And then the following week, you'd have to do 10 mile in full battle order with your water bottle filled and a brick or something in your mess tin to make up the weight. That was 10 mile in an hour and 50 minutes. And then the following week, you'd do a 25-mile route march. And then in between that, of course, you'd do physical training nearly every day. Mess about with telegraph poles, half a dozen men, 7 of you on a telegraph pole, swinging it about over your head and all the rest of it. It was rough and it was tough, but we were treated fairly. We weren't bullied, we were treated fairly. The food was, I can't say it was good, but it was wholesome. You got sufficient for your needs. You never got up from the table hungry, and you got it regular. And I think that's one of the things that got us fit as much as anything, was having your belly filled 4 times a day, and then doing your training in between. I mean, at first thing in the morning, the bugle would go for reveille, and one man each day had to take his turn. He had to get up and get dressed and then run down to the cookhouse, and he'd come back with a billy can full of, which is a big cooking utensil, full of cocoa, which we called gunfire. And then you'd have a pint of this gunfire before you did anything, and then you'd get up and get yourself ready, and then you'd you'd have breakfast, and then you'd start doing your training. One of the main things that they tried to do, you had to be smartly turned out, but you had to get dressed very quickly. I mean, we would go for physical training in PT kit and slippers, and then you'd come back to your billet, and you was dismissed, and you had to be downstairs in full battle order in 2 minutes. That's, you know, to train you just in case when you go into action, if you're attacked, you can always get yourself ready quickly. And everything that you are taught and everything that you do is to make you a better soldier and to teach you how to act in an emergency. And I found it quite good myself because I took to it. A sergeant once said to me, he said, "You know your trouble, Perry." So I said, "No, Sarge." He said, "You take to bloody discipline too well." He said, you love it." Although I didn't like one occasion, I didn't like the discipline too much. We were going on a night map reading exercise. And the sergeant said, "As you coming back," he said, "you will come across an orchard." He said, "You do not touch the fruit in that orchard. Do you understand me?" So I said, "Yes, Sergeant. Yes, Sergeant." So anyway, we're going across this field and we come across the fence. It was a steel rods fence, you know. So we're climbing over it and I put my hand up to steady myself on this tree and I got hold of an apple. So I said to my mate, "Hey, look, apples." So he said, "Right." So he shinned up the tree, I'm at the bottom, and he's dropping them down to me, and I'm sticking them inside my blouse. And all of a sudden, a hand come on my shoulder. "I've got you, Perry." I look around, it's the sergeant. So I got a wing back, went back to the barracks, and he said, "Right, you're on CO's orders in the morning." There was three of us. My mate was up the tree. He didn't catch him. He waited until the sergeant had gone, then he dropped down the tree and caught us up. So anyway, put on CO's orders and I was confined to barracks for 7 days, which means that you can't go out of the barracks. You have to, every time the bugle calls, you have to report. And at night, you have to do fatigues in the cookhouse, which wasn't altogether a bad thing, because if you were lucky and you got a sympathetic sergeant, he'd give you something to eat for your supper after you'd finished your work. But that weekend, my mates, we were all due for weekend leave. And of course, sergeant said, "Right, you can find the barracks, you lose your leave." So I said to my mate, "Are you going home?" So he said, "No." He said, "There's no point." He said, his father worked in the docks and he wasn't very well looked after. I said, "Well, that's all right. Go and see my mum. She'll give you a Sunday dinner." So he says, which he very often did. So anyway, he came home on leave, and then he came back. I said, "Was you all right?" He said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "I went around your house." He said, "Your mum gave me my tea as well." He said, "You know, I was all right." So I said, "Oh, good." So I finished the cookhouse fatigues, went back to the room, and the sergeant was in his room, and he said, "Ah, Perry." So I said, "Yes, son." "Right," I said, "I want to talk to you, lad." He said, "Now, you know why I put you on the charge?" I said, "Yes, Sergeant, because I nicked those apples." He said, no, boy, get it right." He said, I put you on the charge because you disobeyed an order." So I said, do you get the significance of it?" So I said, "Yeah, I've got it now, yeah. Yeah, I disobeyed an order, so you put me on the charge, yeah." "Okay," he said, "right, where you go, lad?" So I turned, I got to the door, he called me back. "Oh, Perry," he said, "by the way," he said, "I went home for weekend leave." He said, "and I had my Sunday lunch." He said, "and I had apple pie for afters." He said, "it was bloody lovely. Thanks very much." But there was humour in it, you know. Although there's discipline, but there's also humour. And that's the army's like that.
Why should he have complained to you that you liked discipline too much?
Well, I think it was because we disobeyed the order, you see.
No, before you said, you know, the trouble with you, Perry, is that
you take to discipline too well.
Why do you think he said that?
Well, I suppose it was because that, in my eyes, I was a good soldier and I always did everything I was told. Some blokes was always trying to skive, you know, trying to get away with things. But I accepted everything that was said to me. I was very naive in those days. I'm a little bit better now. I think I'm growing out of it.
What happened next?
Well, from there, we were put on... I was sent to the 2nd Full Essex Regiment. There was a Dorchester at the time. No, sorry, it's not Abbotsbury. Abbotsbury it was, which is down near Dorchester. We were going on an exercise. We was to do a 25-mile march, bivouac for the night, have something to eat, and then do another 25-mile the following day. Now, this was the part of the exercise, and we were going to be mingled in with the tanks to do combined training. I'm going along the road, marching with the lads, and all of a sudden everything blacked, and I passed out, and sergeant said, right, sit on the curb, lad. He said, there'll be a corporal along in a few minutes to pick you up. So after a short while, this corporal came along, and he's got two or three stragglers with him. So I said, what's the matter with you, lad? I said, I passed out, corp. All right, he said, let's see if we can get you a glass of water from this cottage over here. There's a couple of women and a man standing at the gate of the cottage. So he went over, he said, could you oblige these lads with a glass of water, madam? So she said, certainly. So she went to the well, she got drew this water, and he handed it to me. And as I put my hand out, they said, what's wrong with your hand? I said, I don't know, corp. And I got a blister on that finger. Took the whole of my forefinger was covered in a blister. So I said, my God, that looks nasty. So anyway, we got to the bivouac area, and there's chaps, a few of the chaps were lining up to get their feet inspected and to see if they've got blisters and what have you. And this corporal says, well, we're not waiting for this lot. He went right up the front. So the sergeant said, get up the back, corp, same as everybody else. So he said, no, sergeant, he said, I've got a special one here. He said, I think you ought to have a look at it. So sergeant took one look, said, get him into the MO. Straight into the MO. The MO looked at it and said, mustard gas, get him to hospital. So they took me down to Blandford Camp in Dorchester. And the sister said, would you like a bath? Because, you know, hospital sisters, first thing they say. So I said, oh, yes, please. Well, I've been marching all day. I've done about 20 mile odd. And filthy dirty in the middle of summer. So anyway, I had a bath. She's right, put these pyjamas on, get into bed. The MO will be around to see you in a minute. So he came and looked. He took one look. He said, mustard gas. Where did you pick that up? I said, I don't know, sir. He said, well, you must have picked it up somewhere. I said, well, I don't know. I said, when you're doing a march, I said, as you probably know, sir, when you're doing a march, every hour you stop for 10 minutes, or every 50 minutes you stop for 10 minutes. I said, and you sit down on the grass or wherever. I said, maybe it was on the ground and I've put my hand up to push myself up and I've put my hand in it. He said, well, that can only be the explanation because you haven't been doing any gas training, have you? So I said, no, sir. So I said, all right. So anyway, he got a needle and he pierced it and let all the water out. He said, I'll come and see you tomorrow morning. So following morning he came round and he cut all the skin off, right away off the whole little blister, and then he bound it up and said, right, keep me in bed for a couple of days. Anyway, I was there for 4 days. And then they discharged me and I got a bus from Blandford to Abbotsbury. I walked up the hill to the camp, and just as I'm walking up the hill, all the lads came marching in after this 4 days scheme. They'd been out in the fields for 4 days. Well, what they called me is unprintable. But I don't know what it was, but I always, as a boy, I was always a bit sickly. Things upset my stomach very easily. Travelling, I was hopeless. If I went from here to Aldershot on an underground train, I would be sick. If I got on a bus and went any distance, I would be sick. And I was always like that, which was my biggest downfall going forward a bit, was my biggest downfall when I went to Normandy. But I'll come back to that. I was there for a short while, and then we were sent to the Isle of Wight. which was a 3 month station. We were only allowed to be there 3 months because we were called out nearly every night because there was a big radar station at Ventnor, which was called Boniface Downs, right on top of the cliffs. And we were called out nearly every night to take up positions on the cliff top in case there was... And we were called out if there was any torpedo boat activity or anything in the channel, we were called out. So we were getting disturbed nearly every night. And we were only there for three months. From there, we went... We were shifted about that year, I think about 12 different stations in that year. I think the idea was to confuse the Germans, making them think we'd got more troops than we had. But anyway, we eventually ended up at Morpeth, up in the Northumberland coast. And one day the rumour came around, there's a big draft going out. So... We were all mustered and all had to go and see the MO. He looks at the paybook, A1, tested you. Yeah, you're still A1, okay. So away we went. And we were put on a draft. I'm not quite sure where we were. But anyway, we were taken down to the station in lorries. Now, my cousin... He'd been in the territorials, so he was called up just before the war started, and he was in the 2nd/4th Battalion, Essex Regiment, but which was in those days a holding battalion, because in this area they had so many volunteers that they had too many men for one battalion, so they called up the 1st/4th, which was sent out to the desert, and the 2nd/4th, which was a holding battalion. To as the recruits came through, and then they were fed out to other units as required. So, and he was on the permanent staff of the battalion, and he was a corporal. Anyway, they took us down to the station, and he came down the train looking for us, looking for me. Because he'd always told me that if you come in the army, when you come in the army, ask for the Essex Regiment, and then I'll claim you, which in those days a brother could, an older brother could claim his younger brother. Anyway, he came down the train calling my name, and I looked out the window. He said, "Oh, here you are." He said, "Now, he said, you know, I told you I'd always look after you." So I said, "Yes, Wilf." I said, "But don't worry about that." So he said, "No." He said, "I'm going back now." He said, "I'm going to volunteer, and I'll catch you up." So I said, "No, don't worry." I said, "Leave it." So I said, "No, I'm going to do it." Anyway, he did it. But when we were shifted down prior to D-Day to different camps, sort of leapfrogging down to the south coast. First of all, we went to Gravesend, which was quite close, and I could get home. And we were given 12-hour passes. Well, they were more than 12-hour, but they were one-day passes. We were allowed out at 8 o'clock in the morning. As long as we were back for 23:59 the same night, we was all right. So anyway, I was coming home quite a bit, nearly every day. And my dad said, "Les," he said, "what's going on?" So I said, "What do you mean, Dad?" He said, "Well, you've never done this before. What's going on?" So I said, "Well, I can't tell you." I said, "There's something big coming off." I said, "But I can't tell you what it is or when it's going to be." So he says, "All right, boy." He said, "I don't want to know anymore." So anyway, we got down to Aldershot. And we were under canvas at Aldershot. And they called us on parade. And an officer came up. He said, "Right." He said, "I want men for a special job. Volunteers for a special job." So I looked at my mate. And he...